So, excellent.
Can we start? Are we good?
We can start now, Brian. Thank you.
Fantastic. Cool. Hi, everyone. Welcome. What are we doing? Machine learning in Office 365. My name is Brian Farnhill, and that man there is Aaron Dinage.
Yes. So, I'm based in Melbourne. Please don't hold that against me. I help explain Office 365 to our customers in the enterprise space. So, some of you here in this room will know how poorly I perform at that role, which is great. A little bit about myself. Who's got Fallout 4? Has anyone got it yet? Yeah. How are you even here? Like, Fallout 3 came out and I was just buried for like 3 weeks. I did not do anything. So I'm quite frightened about what's going to happen when I get it.
And like I said, my name is Brian Farnhill. So I'm a senior premier field engineer. I'm based in Canberra. And again, don't hold that against me. You think Melbourne's bad. I spent a bunch of time working with SharePoint, working with our customers, trying to help them not break stuff, ideally, a bunch of proactive activities. And I also spent a bunch of time on Xbox, but I'm not going to go into anything further on that. Let's talk about what we're actually here to talk about today, and that is machine learning and what we use it for inside of Office 365. And before we sort of get started, I wanted to lay out what exactly is machine learning and just sort of give a bit of a run through of what exactly I mean when we're talking about that versus just regular computing. And to make my point, I've got this little dude. This here is Frank. Now, when you've looked at the picture here, you've probably formed an opinion about Frank within about half a second, if that, a fraction of a second, where you've looked at him and you've determined he's not likely to be a threat to you. Now, how have you come to that conclusion? You've looked at it and you've looked at a number of different factors about him straight away. You've said he's got black skin, he's got a tail, he's quite small, he's got these cute flappy little ears. But you've determined that, he's fine, he's cute, he's adorable, I probably want to give him a rub on his belly. Now, if I then go and say something else like maybe this fella, who I think is related to Smaug, but he also has black skin, he has a tail, but he's got a few other differences. He's very large, he has horns, probably breathes fire based on that picture.
They can both fly though.
Yeah, based on the hoverish measure of Frank there. But again, you've immediately been able to form an opinion about the dragon and about the dog. And now that is entirely based on things that you have learned and things that you know as a human. Now, in your head, there have been a bunch of decisions that have gone through that have helped you come to that conclusion in that split second. You've determined, is it bigger than me? Does it have horns? Is it intimidating? Does it want to eat me? Things like that. And you've determined that that's going to be the outcome there and that I probably don't want to go hang out with the dragon. Now, realistically speaking, that's based on your experiences and your learnings. Now, if you, for example, had been hanging out with some friendly dragons, you probably might not come to that same conclusion about the dragon straight away. And that's based on the information you have available about dragons and the previous experience that you have. Conversely, you might have had a bad experience with a sausage dog, I'm not quite sure. But the outcomes that have come from this are around what you have learned as a person to be able to influence those decisions and determine an outcome that is likely going to be the expected outcome based on what you know. So when we then start talking to the machine learning concept is we want to talk about how we can get machines to come to the same conclusions that we do. Right? How do we determine that something is going to be useful to me or a good use of my time if I get a meeting invite? In my head, I assess a number of factors. And the outcome is, yes, I will go to that meeting, or yes, I will reply to that email, or no, I won't. I'm busy. I'm going to go play Xbox. It's fine. So what we're trying to do with machine learning is trying to make some of those decisions for you based on your actual behaviors. And this is a technique called predictive analysis. Right, so this is one of about a half dozen or so different types of machine learning. And you can get into a bunch of other ones, and you probably stand here and just talk about machine learning more broadly for a whole nother hour. But predictive analysis is the one that we use a lot inside of Office 365 because we want to predict what the things are that are going to be useful to you that will then make you more productive. Right, so this is what we want to try to get to. Now, machine learning is not a new concept, and some of the concepts about predictive analysis have been around for quite some time. Amazon.com, who's ever bought anything from Amazon? Pretty much everyone. The way they do recommendations, it's all based on machine learning. It's predictive analysis about people that fit a similar profile to you, people that bought similar things, based on the information they have about you to say these are the products that you're likely to want to have. Facebook, You know, the whole graph behind Facebook and the way they work in determining what posts you read and respond to determine what they're going to show you in your newsfeed. Again, they're trying to predict the things that are going to be useful to you. So there are plenty of places that use machine learning to provide a better experience to customers.
Actually, while we're on the social example, you know, with the Yammer acquisition that we made a while back, we picked up a lot of this technology. And so Yammer had this social graph technology behind it, and it was all about how it's going to promote things to you as well. And we took that technology, and we had this fantastic team out of the fast search engine development, and we said, how can you guys use this to bring value to the whole of the suite? And so that's where some of the stuff you're going to see today is really flown out of. Mm.
So in Office 365, there are a number of places that we're starting to use machine learning, and we're starting to put it into more and more parts of the product as we can add more value to the customers with what we're doing. And there are four key areas that we're going to talk to you guys about today that use machine learning. The first one is Delve. Delve is our great new search experience for being able to find content that is personalized to you and the things that you do. The second one is Office 365 Video, where we're going to talk about how we generate recommendations and try to bring you the content that's relevant to you. And the third and fourth both relate to email, specifically the new Clutter feature, which is part of Exchange Online, as well as the Exchange Online Advanced Threat Analytics and how we use machine learning to help protect users in their email.
What's interesting here also is that Delve, Video, and Clutter were all features that were just rolled into Office 365. So really what we're trying to also highlight here is some of the innovation that's coming out and just being added into the suite. So if you're an Office 365 customer from 6 months ago, you probably didn't even know that these things were coming, and suddenly they're available. And so it's a way that we're innovating. We're using machine learning to deliver some interesting new experiences. And I think it really highlights where the cloud-first approach that Microsoft's taking right now is delivering some pretty excellent value back to customers.
Absolutely. So the first one I'm going to talk to you guys in a bit of detail about is Delve. And Delve is powered from the Office Graph API, which is at the heart of what we do with our machine learning. The concept of work like a network is something that you've probably heard us talk to you about over the last year or two. It's been a big push from us, where we're trying to get people to be a little bit more open in their workplaces about who they're working with, what they're working on, and trying to really break down information silos, which, you know, as a SharePoint guy, we sort of deal with that a fair bit, where you know, each team has their own site and never the two shall meet. But we really want to try to drive behaviors that can enable better productivity between teams and between organizations. So what we did with Delve was we really wanted to try to reimagine what it meant to be able to find content and to be able to bring relevant content to the user and keep the user at the center of that experience. So when we say work like a network, we want to talk about how you can connect with your colleagues that you legitimately work with, not just people who share a common manager. So being able to know the people that you're interacting with in emails, working on documents with, having conversations on Yammer with, and being able to use that to drive decisions about what's going to be relevant to you. The whole concept of what we did with Delve as a starting point, though, was we wanted to try to be a little bit proactive about bringing you content. So anyone who's looked at Delve, you go to the main Delve page, and straight away, it's showing you content that it thinks you need to know about. You know, content that your colleagues are editing and working on, conversations that are getting a lot of traction. It will bring all of that to you because it thinks, well, you probably need to know about that. And we really wanted to make it about the individual, and that was what we did with the search experience as well. So, for example, if I were to go to our main search page for our Microsoft Office 365 tenant and search for something like SharePoint Server Upgrade, fairly generic term, it's going to bring back a ton of stuff. And in an organization of, you know, 100,000 odd people, it's going to take me a while to likely find the information I'm after. But if I go and do that same search in Delve, instead of just giving me keyword and metadata-based responses, it's giving me responses that says, well, I know that these are the types of people you work with, the types of topics and documents you work on, so it will tailor that result set to me as an individual. And if somebody else in Microsoft does that same search, they won't get the same results because it's tailoring it to the individual and really making it about the user. So Delve, like I said, was powered by the Office Graph. So this is a new set of APIs that we have under the hood here, where all of Office 365 is able to feed data into it. So data from Exchange Online and your emails, Skype for Business, SharePoint Online content, Yammer, it's all being able to be fed into that Graph API, and we use that to be able to make decisions and apply our machine learning to be able to bring that unique experience to the users. So let me just sort of explain what the graph looks like for anyone who's not familiar with graph APIs and sort of how they're kind of structured. Let's assume I have a sample user here. Her name is Kat. Now, Kat works on a number of different types of documents. She works with a few different people. She's got a manager. She's got some direct reports and has conversations in a number of different places, in email and in Yammer. Now, when we start looking at all of those individual pieces of content, we need to find a way to be able to connect those in some sort of meaningful fashion. So some fancy PowerPoint animations later, and I've got this fantastic little thing here with Kat at the center of it. And each one of these is connected to her through a particular type of action. So you can see who her manager is, who a direct report, a document that was viewed by Kat, or a conversation that she liked on Yammer. These are all the things that we see in the Office graph. Now, you take this concept and then put Kat into the middle of a wider organization, where it's not just about her, but all the other people around her. So all of a sudden, we then have all of these other people, all of these other documents and content, and we start to see that, okay, well, these things were also liked by other people worked on these documents, and you start to build up a bit of a network of an API here to be really able to see the bits that are relevant to our user and the people around them. And you build up a fairly intricate web pretty quickly of all these relationships between people and content at a fantastic scale. Now, one of the great things about Delve and about the Office Graph API is that it's had security built into it from the very beginning, in that anything that you see in the Delve API, in Delve and inside the Office Graph APIs is still security trimmed. So in the same way that SharePoint search, for example, has always been security trimmed and would only show you content you had access to, Delve is exactly the same. This means that I can't, for example, go and just follow guys from the SharePoint product group in Redmond and find out the top secret stuff they're working on, because I don't have access to see those documents. But if they're working on documents I've got access to as well, and Delve thinks that they're relevant to me, we'll get to see that content as well. So it's got it's aware of the concepts of a document being secured or a Yammer group being private, and it makes sure that it doesn't break any of that security when it presents the content back to the users. That said, if you haven't implemented your security settings entirely, well, this is a great way to show that up. But it's built to enforce everything that you tell it about how you apply security to your content.
So the big point there being that it still keeps that control within the organisation and gives those privacy controls to the individuals as well. If I don't want Brian to see my content, I don't put it somewhere that he can see it. And that's always been the case. And search has always been able to break through and find stuff that's accessible. So
absolutely.
So it's not really changing anything in that sense. It's just still adhering to all those controls you'd expect to have.
Mm. So, like I said, the Graph APIs and Delve are built across a wide range of content that we have inside of Office 365. It's aware of the people around you, the people you work with, the ones you work with regularly, as well as the ones you have ad hoc meetings with. It's aware of all sorts of different types of content. It sees documents. It sees sites. Media from Office 365 video and all of those sources. We've also tried to be able to enable this for a wider ecosystem in that we publish the Office Graph APIs for developers to be able to use. This means that there are third-party apps that can be published into the App Store that your users can download and consume that will benefit from the Office Graph API and the machine learning technology that we've put into this. And out of that, we're going to see a lot of really interesting applications, and Delve was the first cab off the rank for us that really sort of showcased some of this technology. So the great thing about Delve as well is that it works across a number of different platforms. We've got a web browser app, we've got mobile apps, so we can get to our content whenever we feel the need to be able to do so. Now, on that note, though, let's actually have a look at Delve.
Yeah. So what I'll do, I'll walk you through a little bit about Delve, what it looks like, how it works, and any questions you've got. I know women sort of keep questions to the end, but that's boring. So yell out any questions you've got as we go. I've got two more drink bottles, and I've got some Office 365 shirts as well. So
we're not above buying your attention.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it's a long conference, so... So who's got Delve? Who's in Office 365 today? They're using Delve on a regular basis. Okay, good. So there's plenty of opportunity to show you some stuff here that you haven't seen yet. So Delve's been rolling out over the last little while, and it's now pretty much, I think it's completed its rollout.
No,
everyone's
sure
got access to it.
Yeah.
So whether your tenancy is hosted in Australia or anywhere else around the world, you've got access to Delve now. There are controls over that, and you can opt out. Otherwise, you should see the Delve icon start showing up inside your app launcher, your waffle menu in Office 365 today. I said waffle menu there. It looks like a waffle, just in case you... Yeah, just I'm not crazy. So click through, have a bit of a look. Now, this is a demo tenant, so the content here is a little bit boring. I usually demonstrate from my own account, but...
But this session's being recorded and going to online.
Exactly, so I'd probably get in a bit of trouble for that. So what am I seeing here? So straight away, I'm not doing a search. I've clicked on the Delve link. I haven't typed anything. I haven't done anything else to cue any of this content to come through. It just starts presenting things that it thinks are going to be relevant for me. So it's doing that based on exactly what Brian was talking about before. It's doing that based on the interactions I'm having with people and content around the organization. So today I'm signed in as Alex Darrow, and he's going to click into Delve and see all this content being surfaced that his colleagues are working on. So you can see Garth's been working on some Northwind Traders reports and reviews, and we can see Robin's been working on a PowerPoint presentation. I actually come into Delve quite regularly. Whenever I'm doing customer presentations, the first place I go before I go out to the customer is into Delve, because I'm not the only person in my organization that does that sort of thing. And so there's plenty of content that people like Brian are generating. From Brian's in Canberra, completely different part of Microsoft, but he's generating content that's going to be useful for me. So why should I be reinventing the wheel every time I want to put something together, any sort of presentation? So every day I'm coming in here and finding content that my colleagues are working on that's helping me to get my job done quicker. And I can, after doing this for a couple of months, I can point at specific examples where it saved me literally hours of work because someone else, unbeknownst to me, has actually already done the thing that I'm about to do. So it can be quite a time saver. So you can see here I get previews of the content, and I can click through and actually load up that content and access it directly. A couple of other things, I'll just give you a bit of an overview of the interface here. I can provide additional cues into Delve and the Office Graph by doing things like favoriting and creating boards of content. So I've got a couple of boards here. I've got a marketing campaigns board and strategy board. And this is where I pull together content that I'm interested in, so I can easily find it next time, because I could come back in here tomorrow and get a completely different set of content visible to me because there's new things that are being generated all the time, whereas a board would help me to organise those and always come back and find them again. So as I go through... Yeah, go.
Repeat it.
Yeah, so the question there is, she's very organised, very structured, and keeps all of the things that she's working on in a very organised way. Is that all going to be exposed to colleagues? Are they all going to get to see exactly what's being worked on? And so the key point there is, if you're working in a space that is open to your colleagues, so maybe it's a SharePoint team site where all that content is visible to your colleagues, then yes, it may turn up in their Delve. Exactly.
Yeah. So, for example, I work out of my OneDrive for Business library quite a lot. Parts of my OneDrive for Business I have shared with other colleagues, and the stuff that goes in those folders will turn up for other people. Mm. But I have plenty of content that I don't share with everyone, and that is only visible to me.
That's right. So here's an example of where you'd do that in OneDrive for Business. I've got a shared with everyone folder, and by default, that content is fair game. It's interesting. Within Microsoft today, there's people who still work in that old way of, I'll keep everything private, and then when I need to, I'll let individuals get access to it. And then there's a whole different mindset of, I'm going to work openly and actually put things out in the open by default and only close them away when I need to. And that approach is actually getting a lot of traction. So one really good example of this is during the... a bit of a tangent here, sorry, Ryan. During the Iraq and Afghanistan campaigns, the United States Army was really struggling with facing an enemy that worked like a network. While they were a prime example of one of the most hierarchical and structured organizations in the world. But their opponent, their enemy, was working like a network. They were using modern technology to connect information with people very, very quickly. And so the General McChrystal, who was commanding the forces at that point in time, made a conscious decision, we have to change the way we work. And so he actually implemented a campaign of changing that model from a closed by default approach to an open by default approach. So from a need to know to a need not to know mentality, which is quite challenging. and especially in an organization like the United States Army. So, but the benefit is massive by saying, hang on a second, does this stuff that I've got here actually need to be closed off and only visible to me, really? If it doesn't, open it up, because it's going to unlock productivity across your organization. And so they were able to make some significant inroads when they took that approach, he was credited with taking down significant leaders of the enemy organization at that point in time. And now he speaks publicly about that around the world, quite a sought-after public speaker. But that approach has applicability in all of our organisations, and I'm sure we see examples of that, and you could cite examples where you see that yourself. So once it's out in the open, once you're working out loud, as the Yammer guys like to say, you make this content fair game for your colleagues, and it improves their productivity. So back on the user interface here, I can add content to boards very easily to collect it and come back to it later, and I can show you what one of those looks like here. If I click into this marketing campaign board, there's a collection of content from across the organisation that has been pulled together and makes it really easy. I can also drill down into individual people, so I can go and have a look at what's Katie working on, and I'll get to see exactly that. Here's the last content that she has been modifying and a lot of display forms there, that's a bit odd. lots of marketing material, etc. here that she's been working on. So I can actually drill in. I know Katie creates great content, so I'm going to go and check out what she's been working on. So I can actually use it as a bit of a discovery of content process here. Same thing if I click into Garth over here. But I can also go and just find my stuff. So if you're like me, you'll have a lot of stuff that you've collected over the last, while. I've been at Microsoft nearly 2.5 years. I've got about 7.5 gigabytes of content in my OneDrive for Business, and a lot of it could probably be deleted. I work on things day to day, and I forget where I put them. So being able to click on your name or your me link and see all your recent things that you've been working on is actually also sometimes quite useful as well. Lots of display forms there again. That's odd. So being able to click in and do that is quite useful. You'll also notice that there are filters there when I do that. Let me go back in. So I can actually filter down and look for particular file types, for example. This is also now, just as an aside, where we surface the user profile. And we've added in some interesting new capabilities around blog posting. If you haven't checked that out, go and have a look, because it's a bit of a view of what's coming around breaking away from the what you see is what you get editing of the past to a new method of content creation. So just as a complete aside, it's worth checking that out. But you'll see this is now where the user profile starts to surface inside Office 365. So it gives you a bit of an indication of where we're investing a lot of effort to extend this capability. And, of course, I can still search. So when I'm sitting here and I'm looking for a particular spreadsheet or form, I'll just try this word here, the content that comes back is getting this new layer of relevance added onto it. So it's not just a normal, everyday, run-of-the-mill enterprise search. It's actually getting all that social graph, that graph connectivity, included as a layer of relevance. So I see Garth's content before I see provisioning user content. That's annoying. That also comes through. So, it's a more intelligent search. But the way I like to think about it is that by default, it just kind of flips search on its side and brings content to me before I ask for it. And that, once you start using it, you'll find, hopefully, like I have, that's actually incredibly useful.
And just for another quick look as well, we'll show you guys what the mobile app looks like as well, just to give you some of that experience. So let's go and open up the Delve mobile app here. And you'll see the experience of what we get on the mobile is very similar to what we get out of the web browser there. So it's bringing my content to me. Now, this is my personal one, and I've got a bunch of stuff that I've been working on and a few colleagues I've been working with. I can flick over to people. And what's actually really interesting about this is, you see, number one on the list of people there is Aaron. Now, Aaron and I are in two very different parts of the organization. He's in sales, I'm in services. But he's at the top of that list right now because we've been working a lot on this presentation. So Delve knows that we've been collaborating, and that if I'm looking for people, Aaron's one of the people I might be looking to talk to right now. So he works his way to that list.
If you had to trace that through the org chart, it would probably be 50 people removed from
Yeah, I actually don't think we share a manager until outside of Australia at some point. Yeah. So I'm able to go through and see some of the favourites I've got. Clearly, I like using pictures of animals in my slides. But and then go over to the My Work view, and you see some of the stuff that I've been working on and get those same views. So being on the mobile device gives you a tailored experience to the same content.
Great.
Yeah, so the question was, do you have the ability to sort of provide feedback into Delve about what's relevant and what's not to stop it from being spammed or prioritize other content? Yes and no. So at the moment inside of Delve, you've got the ability to mark things as favorites, for example, and Delve sort of learns over time what content's actually useful to you. So, for example, if my manager or an admin, as you said, is editing a bunch of content that would then fill up that feed, if I'm not working on a lot of that content, or I don't need to see that content based on, you know, what's in the documents and what I'm doing now, it won't be shown to you unless Delve feels that there's a reason for you to see it. So there are limited ways in some parts of the Graph API to be able to put that feedback into it, so things like Clutter where we can teach it like that as well. But that's an area that's still sort of developing. Yeah, so if you've got an interest in a topic, so those boards that Aaron was showing to you, they're actually open to the organization to any of the content that you have permission to see. So I could, for example, just go and find the name of a board of a topic that I'm interested in, and anytime somebody's pinning onto that board, you can go and see that content. So that's one way of being able to follow specific content areas to see the stuff that's being created in your organization.
So if you think about where this shows up in consumer space at the moment, you see applications like Pinterest, where you actually go in and proactively indicate your interests, and then it provides content in response. Delve and the Office
similar
Graph
concept.
Are similar, but take a different view on it of it's going to learn what's interesting to you, and that will change over time, and it will keep that up to date to always bring in fresh new content. So it's less about you dictating and it sitting back and learning, which is quite an interesting way of doing it. I think we've got a question down the back. So, very good question there about can you connect this with external content that's not in Office 365. We'll touch exactly on that point a little bit later on.
Yep.
Before we move any further, though, T-shirt or drink bottle?
We're still giving away free stuff.
T-shirt? Okay.
You guys
make
sort
sure
that
you
out.
I'll sort that out. You keep talking, Brian.
So the next part of our machine learning in Office 365 that I want to talk to you guys about is what we did with Office 365 video. So for those of you who haven't heard about Office 365 Video, it's one of what we're calling our next-gen portals that we've built into Office 365. For any of you who have been doing SharePoint stuff for a while, you've probably come across a project at some point where you've heard, oh, we need to build a corporate version of YouTube. It's a fairly common thing that we see a lot of. So we've gone back to the drawing board and said, well, why don't we build that into Office 365 and save people the time of having to go and do that for themselves? And the benefit of that is we've been able to build a bunch of our technology into it from the server side. So we're taking advantage of the Azure media streaming services and combining that into the Office 365 experience to give a really great video portal that you can use across your entire organization. It's a secure place that you can share content internally in your organization as opposed to going public. And it's really been built to be just a ludicrously simple experience. There's not a lot to it from a UI perspective, but that makes it very easy to just get in and find content.
Mm. So that Azure Media Services that underpins that is actually quite a mature technology within Azure. And it was used to stream events like the Sochi Olympics and many large international sporting events since then. So it's quite a mature, as I say, platform that's being used there. As a reformed developer myself, I've actually built platforms to do this in the past, and it's an extraordinarily difficult thing to do and get right and maintain. So being able to just plug in and get this capability is quite useful.
So the way that we connect this into the Office Graph is there's a couple of different ways that we feed data in. So any videos that get uploaded, they're just treated the same as any other content in Office 365. So when I upload a document to SharePoint, uploading a video into 365 Video is, for all intents and purposes, the same thing. We'll then be shown like a content card about a video if Delve and the Office Graph think it's relevant to me. The views of videos also create another signal, so videos that are being viewed a lot get treated in Delve as something you might want to see more because it's a popular video, so we keep track of that kind of thing as well. So we're using those Graph APIs to also create recommendations for you. So as a user, when I go into the 365 video portal or into the app, because we've got, again, mobile apps for that, it shows me videos that it thinks are relevant to me. That's very useful for me in the Microsoft tenant because we have a lot of people that generate a lot of video content. So being able to have it recommend stuff to me, it makes it a little bit easier for me to find things as I'm searching through it. The other way that we've got this sort of connected as well is that it's integrated very tightly with Yammer in that I get a native discussion panel for each video where I can have a comments thread and a bit of a running discussion about the video. And of course, Yammer connected directly to the Office Graph, those discussions are fed back in there as well. So those Yammer discussions about the videos are another place that we can feed that content back into the graph and show it back out to the users as being something that's potentially relevant to them and something that they want to know about. So let's have a quick look at what Office 365 Video looks like. Mm.
So as I said earlier, this is a capability that's been delivered recently. Most of the customers I worked with actually didn't buy Office 365 for this capability, but I'm working with a few at the moment that are very, very keen to get it out and use it. So you can think of certainly the situations where you've got corporate comms, training material, but also organizations that have workforces sort of dispersed around the country. This can be a really great way to get content out to them without having to put it up on public services like YouTube or go and buy expensive corporate video services. So this, again, is just an example tenant. There's nothing flash here, no smoke and mirrors. I've just got a bunch of content loaded in here. So very familiar experience to anyone who's used any online video service in the last, years. So top here is this dark background area that has some spotlighted content. And so as an owner of this space, an administrator, I can go in and say, this is the content that I want to really highlight at the moment. So that's human controlled. And then as I go down the page, I can see trending videos. So this is taking that data about who's clicking through and what they're clicking on and then presenting back to me, the end user, what's currently being viewed, what's trending. And then we move into what we call channels. So I've decided to put some particular channels, some particular categories, if you wish, of content here to spotlight and show people. And so then, as you'd expect, when I click through into one of these videos, it's a pretty simple, pretty straightforward experience. I get a large video window straight in the middle of the screen, and it's going off to the Azure Media Streaming Services to pull that down. I'm actually just running off my phone at the moment, so if it's a little bit slow, apologies, but then it's probably faster than the conference Wi-Fi. So anyway, very straightforward experience as you'd expect. I've got all the normal playback controls that you'd expect to have, and then things get interesting down here. Basic metadata, category that it lives in, a bit of a description can be put in here, and I can just add that in. Hello world, ubiquitous comment there. And then this is where that machine learning starts to surface. So you might also like. So based on the content interactions that I'm having, what's popular, what's trending, we're again using that information to provide contextualized suggestions back to me here. So again, another just... It doesn't have to be groundbreaking, amazing stuff like Delve. There's actually lots of little places throughout the entire suite where this machine learning technology is starting to bubble up in ways that people don't even realize it there. And so all this content is stored. So say, for example, I load up a 10 megabyte video. Let's keep that one rolling. And I put that into Office 365 Video. That 10 megabyte video will decrease 10 megabytes of my quota in SharePoint Online. In the background, we're actually creating many different copies to suit all the various device form factors and bandwidth availability and formats that are required to get video down to all the variety of devices that are out there today. But that storage of that multiple copies doesn't count against my allocation in SharePoint Online. So we're keeping it really easy for our customers to keep track of how much data they're using and understand what the impact of that will be. And then it gets streamed down in 2-second chunks over an HTTPS connection. Every 2 seconds it's making an evaluation as to whether it can step up to a higher bandwidth or lower bandwidth version of that stream. So it's a pretty smart playback system. You also notice here, just as a bit of a tour, I'm an administrator, I can delete content. Most users won't see that button, but everyone's going to see this embed button. And so I can actually now get an embedding code to drop these videos back into other pages within the platform that I want to share content with people. So I could put this video on the homepage of the intranet, I could put it on the team site, etc. And what's really nice about that is when users that aren't licensed to come into this video portal, because it comes in the eSKUs, so say I've got some kiosk users, they can actually consume video content through that embedding back into other pages. I think there was a question down here.
Can anyone upload video content?
Great question. So can anyone upload video content? So first of all, there is a licensing requirement around being on an E SKU, so an enterprise SKU. But once that's been met, you then do have control over who is allowed to come in and upload video. So you can determine for your organization, this group of users is allowed to upload video, this group of users are allowed to moderate and make changes, and everybody else cannot, can maybe just only come in and view video. And we've got another question down here. Yep, so the question there is around how do I secure the video content, because I may have some content that I don't want everybody to see. So here we've got, for example, a channel for company meetings, and I can come in and upload video here, but maybe I don't want everyone to have access to company meetings, or maybe there's particular content that I don't want to give everyone access to. So yes, so we're now able to, and I don't know if I've got it in my demo tent at the moment, but we're rolling out some enhancements that allow you to do exactly that, to be able to say, no, this content is for these people, this content is for everybody else. So yeah, very commonly requested capability. I'm not sure that I have access to it in this.
No, I don't think that tenant's got it.
No, but it's rolling out very, very soon. So it's actually rolling out now. Yeah. And one last question down the back.
Is there any DRM?
Very good question. Is there any DRM on the videos? In the current implementation, there is not. The videos are only streamed for authenticated users over a HTTPS connection. But no, there's no additional DRM above and beyond that at this point in time. No. So we'll keep moving.
We'll keep moving, and we'll take some more questions at the end.
Cool.
Switching back over.
And there you are.
Cool. So the next area about our machine learning that I want to talk to you guys about is a feature called Clutter. Which is part of our Exchange Online email system. So the concept behind Clutter is it's a little bit different to spam. Think about a scenario where me, for example, I subscribe to a bunch of newsletters around like Xbox and things like that. Now, these are emails that I've chosen to receive. I've opted in to get to this newsletter, but I don't necessarily need it clogging up my inbox straight away. I want it to be put somewhere else so that I can go and deal with it.
It's not relevant to your day-to-day work.
No.
But you're still interested in it.
But I'm still interested in it. So the concept here is around Exchange Online and using the machine learning to say, well, these are emails that Brian tends to read straight away versus ones that maybe he puts off till a little bit later. Those emails are then picked up as clutter and moved to a separate folder. And so this is all based on machine learning and the behaviors you exhibit as you're reading email and sending and working with emails. So it's able to determine that, oh, that Xbox newsletter, he probably doesn't need to see that straight away. And it puts it into my clutter folder, in that it knows I want to read it at some point, but it takes it out of that inbox. And for me, that helps enable some more productivity in the fact that I'm one of these people who lives in my inbox. When something comes in via email, I generally tend to deal with it sooner rather than later. So the less traffic I've got in my inbox, the better. Now, the way this is connected into the Office Graph is, again, through the exchanges you have with your email. What you're reading, what you're deleting straight away, things that you're moving off into other folders, how you interact with your email. We capture all of this and use that machine learning to try to determine patterns about what's relevant for you as a user. You've also got the ability through Outlook Web Access, and I'm pretty sure it's in the Outlook desktop client as well,
yes,
to specifically mark something as clutter, or if you drag it back out of the clutter folder, it's going to take notice of that as well. And so this is another one of those examples where the machine learning is going to improve over time based on the amount of data it has about you. So that way it's going to be more productive for you the more you use it. So it gets smarter over time, which is a really great way to be able to work with this. Other features to do with Exchange and what we're doing in Exchange Online is advanced threat protection, which is a relatively new feature.
Yes,
And it does some really cool stuff to really help protect users in their email on a day-to-day basis. So detecting what's a spam message is essentially, it's only part of the problem, because there are still scenarios where an email with a malicious attachment may still get through, or an email with a link to a malicious website has come through to a user. So we need to do more to make sure that in these cases where previously we've said user education is the key, and to an extent it still is, but we want to try to help the users in that if they don't necessarily make the right decision, we can catch more things before they go wrong. And we use machine learning in some ways to help drive some of this behavior. Now, the first one we use here is around some advanced attachment protection. So what we actually do when an email comes in to Exchange Online, and also if you're using Exchange on-premises but forwarding through Exchange Online, so you've got that Exchange Online protection, you'll get this same behavior where we scan an attachment when it comes in. And if we determine that it's got a virus, that's fine, we'll quarantine it. But if it looks like it's clean, we'll actually go and do a couple more things with it. What we do is we create a separate isolated environment using a hypervisor where we unpack that attachment and we actually execute it. We open it and we let it rip. What we do there is we don't necessarily look for specific signatures, but we monitor behaviors. What is that document doing to that environment? Now, is it looking to manipulate malicious registry keys or is it deleting files? And we use machine learning to look at those behaviors and determine what's likely a threat and what is a genuine piece of content. So where this helps is like a zero-day scenario where a new virus has come out, a new attack has come out, and antivirus definitions haven't necessarily been updated because we're still trying to figure out what it is. This kind of thing, we'll use machine learning to find those behaviors, those malicious behaviors, and say that's probably a threat before we necessarily know exactly what that threat is. So it's going to help protect your users from those kinds of malicious attachments.
And so an administrator can choose what to do then.
So it may be
that you quarantine that, it may be you blow it up and don't let it go through. That's up to you, how you want to manage that detected item.
Now, the second thing we're doing with machine learning here is around protection of links. Now, one of the newer types of attacks we've been seeing via email is around, I will send an email with a link to a website, and at the time of that email coming in, the link gets scanned and we determine what that website is and that it's probably fine. But a thing we're seeing now is that attackers are then redirecting that website to a malicious one after the emails have been sent, which means that when you've scanned it at time of sending and determined what that website is, that it's been fine, but it might get redirected to something later, which means you've already missed your chance to scan that link now. So what we're doing in emails that are coming through Office 365 is we're actually routing them back through a service when they get clicked, and we're applying our machine learning to that to determine if the website is going to be a threat or not. So that way, when a user clicks a link, as opposed to just when the email comes in, we're providing multiple points of protection there. And again, what ends up being a threat and what doesn't all comes back into our machine learning so that we can provide better results to users about what's a malicious website and what's not. So Aaron's got a quick demo on both of those features.
Yeah. So everything we've spoken about so far, including clutter, is being rolled out to existing Office 365 customers. What I'll show you in a moment around advanced threat protection is a new capability that we're adding into selling as a standalone item, but also as part of our new E5 SKU as well. So just to be really clear about what existing customers can expect to see and what you would need to step up to get access to. So here I am in Exchange Online, Outlook Online, and I'm in the web browser, but I could equally be doing this in Outlook. So this is not a web-only capability that I'm showing here. So here I am in email, and you'll notice that I've got this clutter folder, and this is where all of those things that are being automatically detected as not really relevant are going to get dropped into. So if I click into there, I can see, first of all, it's going to prompt me here, you know, just so you know, if it's not really clutter, you can push it back out, and that will help to train the system. So this one does take a bit more proactive training for it to understand, which is a little bit different to some of what the things we've shown you so far. So here, for example, I might decide, you know what, Dorina actually isn't someone I want to treat as clutter, so I'm going to pop her emails back out, and that's going to help to inform it going forward. Back over in my normal inbox, I can choose an email and I can push it into clutter. So again, I can move things in both directions to help refine the understanding of what is relevant to me. And that feeds directly back into the machine learning process, directly back in to help me. And so the goal here being that over time, my inbox is going to become quite focused on just the things that are actually relevant to me today to do my work. And then when I've got some time later in the day, I'll jump over here and read the other stuff that's not that important for my day-to-day. And so again, it's about improving productivity. So pretty straightforward in the way that works. Let me show you how the advanced threat protection works around link scanning. So here I've got an email that's come through. It just says, hey, Brian, someone forwarded me this site. It looks like we can get all of our flights here over the next few months. You know, there's cheap flights. Great. That sounds excellent. And we can see that they've got a little signature here with a link to Bing. And if I click on that, it takes me to Bing. Great. All good. Nothing dangerous there. We don't classify Bing as a threat. But this link here is a little bit different. And so if you can see the bottom of the screen there, it's quite small, but basically all the links that are in this email are being wrapped so that when I click on it, it's going through our redirection service before it lets the user go to the endpoint. So when I click on this one, we're doing a little check and we're saying, hang on a second, actually that endpoint where you're trying to get to is not cool. That is malicious. There's a problem there. And so just to reiterate what Brian said there, I could receive a link in an email that went through a redirection service, and at the time it hit the mail filter, that redirection service was pointing back to Bing or somewhere else that's not a threat. But 5 minutes later, when it's sitting in my mailbox and nothing's changed about the email, the redirection service might be changed to go and point somewhere malicious, and under traditional email scanning scenarios, we would not pick up on that, and I would click through and I would go to that endpoint. With this approach, by wrapping the links, when I click the link is when the scan takes place, and a determination is made in real time. And that's exactly what you've seen here.
And the great thing about this type of protection is it doesn't matter what device you're checking your email on. If I've got emails on my phone or on my desktop, no matter where I click on the link from, I'm still getting that protection. Right, so it's not limited or dependent on me running Outlook or using the web browser or anything like that. If I've got my iPhone or my mobile device where I've just connected a native Exchange online account, it'll still get that same type of protection because we're just modifying the link that's sent down to the client so that it always goes through our redirection service.
So you can see here this safelinks.protection.outlook.com is that redirection that's happening to make that determination as to whether or not this is legitimate and safe. And it's a really good point because often to get extra protection around an email, you need to add plugins into Outlook and add things on. This absolutely doesn't require you to do anything. It's being wrapped as it comes in and lands in the mailbox. And that mailbox could be back on-prem. It could be in Exchange Online. Are there any questions about that? Yep.
How would it work with internal links, like corporate links?
Yeah, no problem. So the question there is, how does it work with internal links? So we get this inside Microsoft. We've been using this technology for quite a while. I've not had one fail yet. So the link itself is just being wrapped, and so it'll bounce out to check with our service, but our service will say, that's an internal link, that's not a online address, that's internal, and I'll just bounce straight back in. So that redirection is all happening inside the browser session, and so it works just the same and allows internal systems to pass through. So no dramas there at all. Good question. So good question there about can an admin make some decision about what's malicious and what's not. The service as it stands today is fairly straightforward in its application. We're taking the knowledge that we have around this and applying it directly. So we're not opening it up per se to allow you to override and allow some users to get malicious links, for example. So we're sort of taking a cautious approach, but it's if you feel there's an applicability there where you'd like to be able to say it's all right if Brian goes somewhere dodgy, or you know it's that link is not dodgy, that might be something we can certainly create some feedback on and
go forward. Voice.
Yeah,
cool.
One more. It's going off to the Exchange Online service, and Exchange Online is hosted in Australia. Cool. All right. Thank you. Oh, I've been neglecting my duties. Drink bottle or shirt?
You had one job, man.
I had one job, I know. Continue.
Excellent. You'll sort that out. So the last thing I want to talk to you guys about today is around ways that we allow you guys to build applications and build things on top of what we've got on our machine learning technology here. So you can extend your experiences using that great machine learning that we have in the platform and do your own really cool things with them. So we've essentially built those Office Graph APIs to be able to be public endpoints. And it was actually some announcements overnight from the Connect conference where these APIs that I'm about to show you, they've all now gone public. They're out of preview now. They are completely open APIs that we've got documented and it's fully supported. So, but what we can do with the graph today is we can use it to read data back out of the graph. There was a question earlier about can we feed custom data into it? Not yet, but it's on the roadmap. So, because we've got exactly that kind of scenario, and there are some places that we're working with at the moment around being able to feed that content in. Salesforce is one of those, where they're looking at being able to feed that exact CRM scenario back in there to show you relevant customers and that kind of thing. So we're in the process of getting that ability for developers to feed custom content into the graph opened up. But for the time being, we're able to read from the graph and be able to determine what's relevant to a specific user. So the way we sort of look at this, and this comes back to that that flashy slide I had earlier, is if I've got person A and person B here and a document in the middle, you can see that I've got a signal either side of that, and that person A shared document and that person B modified document. Now, when we break this down into the API, this is sort of the terminology that we use to define these things. The people in these scenarios we refer to as actors. The documents and content are objects, and those signals in between, we refer to those as edges. So we can use a combination of these three to build queries to go against the graph to bring us back different types of data that we can then surface up in meaningful ways to our users. Now, there are a couple of main types of queries that we sort of simplify down to make it very easy to consume them. And the first one is the trending around query. So this gives me the ability to say, I want to find content of any sort, and I could filter that with a custom query, to be able to say, show me what's trending around a particular person. So show me all the PowerPoint documents that are trending around Aaron, for example. What that looks like, so all of the APIs are all REST-based APIs, so I can fire REST URLs in there, make queries and get my data back out. The data is returned as JSON objects. So you can see here the two URLs at the top, and again, ignore the beta parts of the URLs because they've now changed now that we've gone public. But you can see where I can say /me/ trending around to find the things that are trending around the currently authenticated user. Right, so all of these APIs require authentication, and this is how we can still enforce that same level of security through the APIs that you see in Delve, in that if a person doesn't have access to content, it won't be returned to them, not through the API and not through Delve. The other option is I've got the ability to say a specific user. So in this case, I say /tenant name, so contoso.onmicrosoft.com, /users, and then an email address, and then trending around. So that way I can say, show me everything that's trending around that user that I have permission to see. So for example, if Aaron was running an app that was making that call to see what's trending around me, he would see the documents trending around me that he has permission to see. Not necessarily everything, because I might have some things that are private or shared with other people and not Aaron. So it enforces that. And it just brings us back a really simple JSON blob with the name of the document, a little bit of metadata, and the URL about where it is. Right? So it becomes very easy to discover the content that way. The second type of query that we've wrapped up to make quite simple to use is the working with query. This is all about finding people that are connected to and genuinely engaging with a person. So again, this works in a very similar way. So just /working with and the same way to search for a specific user as well. And all you get back out of that is just a name and an email address of the people that are working with that person. So again, really easy to find the people that are collaborating with others to be able to then maybe look at relevant documents from them and aggregate some calls from both APIs to create some interesting and compelling content. Now, above and beyond that, though, we actually make it really easy to do some fairly specific querying for content in there. And there's a number of different ways that we can build a query in our REST URLs to be able to go through and query the graph. So here's an example of a URL that we can make a query against. And there are essentially two different parts of this you need to be aware of as a developer. The first one at the top is the query text field. So this is just an open text search, similar to the way that Aaron demoed earlier when he was just in that search box in Delve. That's the equivalent of that. This bit below here that starts with graph query and then actor, that's a specific query against the graph where we can start to really narrow down exactly what it is I'm trying to pull back. And there are a number of different sources, and it just looks like numbers and gibberish there at the moment. But what we've actually got, and this is a copy of the documentation that we've got there, is there are a number of different types of queries we can execute here. So you can see I can query the personal feed. I can get a list of documents that a person has modified, not just things they've viewed. I can see who their colleagues are, their direct reports, their manager and skip level manager, who they're working with, trending around, documents that they've viewed in the last 3 months, as well as people that are working with on a public version of that edge. Now, it's also worth calling out here that the visibility of these, some of them are actually private. So for example, I can't go in and make an API call where I'm authenticated, where I would wanting to be see the documents that Aaron has viewed in the last 3 months. But I can see the things that I have viewed. Right? So if I'm logged into an app that makes an API call to try to find out about the documents Aaron's viewed, it's going to say, no, you don't have permission to that one, because that's a private one for the individual user. Right? So we do lock some of those down. But each one of them has an ID number, which correlates back into what goes into that query. So by the time you start saying, here's my query text, here's the area I want to filter to, and you can build some additional properties into that to filter by file types and things like that as well. So you can get fairly specific with the types of content you want to request, and it's no longer just about a plain text query, it's about an intelligent, focused query that's relevant to that individual user. So this is going to open up some really interesting scenarios for what developers are going to be able to do. And we can wrap these apps up and publish them into the store so that people using Office 365 more broadly can just go straight into that add-in store and download add-ins into their SharePoint sites, into their Exchange Online, and start using those within their Office 365 experience.
So we're already seeing some partners developing components to deploy back into SharePoint intranets to surface content directly related to the user that's logged in. Here's just the last things you were working on. Here's some interesting stuff. Mm. So ways of visualizing that graph data without forcing the user to go necessarily back through Delve, but getting the same content and experience and putting it into the intranet.
Yeah, so like a widget on a homepage of an intranet is a common one of the documents that you've been working on recently.
Exactly, and it just creates a more dynamic intranet landing page, because you know we all know we want to get away from those static, boring, nobody comes here pages and make it a bit more interesting.
Question? Yes.
I just noticed you've got a public equivalent of the same thing. What's the actual difference between those?
I'll be honest with you, that documentation has been updated again since we went public yesterday, and I haven't had a chance to read it because the announcement got made at 1 a.m. and I know that there were some changes in there.
We'll show you the blog post.
We've got a blog post with some monstrous amounts of stuff. Read the doco is my advice on that one, because I knew I needed to go and check that and I forgot to get that out of the slides. But yeah, good question. Any other questions there? No? Yeah? If I switch Delve off, can I still use the Office Graph APIs? I don't believe so.
No. So if you opt out, you're making a decision not to be included in that.
Yeah. So that disables the Graph API across the tenant.
Yep. So no cake and eat it too.
Yes. Yep.
Drink bottles? T-shirt?
Fantastic.
T-shirt? All right.
Cool. So wrapping up, a bit of a review over what we've been over today. We sort of talked to you guys about the different ways that we're using machine learning today in Office 365 to really drive that experience for the users and make life better for our users. And we sort of had this interesting discussion, Aaron and I, when we started talking about this session, in that we realized when machine learning is working well, you kind of don't even realize that it's there. It simplifies things for the user. It's in the background just helping focus and make people more productive, which is a really great thing. So we talked about Delve, which was at the heart of our search experience, being able to deliver those personalized, relevant pieces of information to users. We talked about Office 365 video and the recommendations and how we've built that in there with machine learning. We covered off clutter and advanced threat analytics for how we're really driving a new generation of protection for emails. And then we finished up with a bit around those APIs and how you can really extend that story as a developer and create some compelling stuff for your users.
So hopefully the message that's coming through here is about, we're doing some really interesting stuff in the background. There's things that we can only do in the cloud with the latent compute capacity that we have in our hyperscale cloud environment. And we're delivering that value back to customers of Office 365 on a regular cadence. There's stuff there that you may be a customer today and didn't know that we'd actually delivered over the last few months. And that's great. Hopefully you can go back into your organizations and drive some value out of that. It's an example of where the innovation that we're providing in the cloud is delivering that value straight back to customers. And hopefully this gives you a bit of a glimpse into how the machine learning components of that are particularly able to do that and only really able to do that out of
Absolutely.
Our cloud.
So my call to action for you guys from this, because hopefully we've convinced you that there's some cool stuff here that's worth looking at. If you're not using Office 365 today, go and sign up for a free trial. Go to office.com and get yourself a trial tenant and just start having a bit of a play around and see how these features work and what they look like. It's free. You can get in and just have a really good play with the entire platform. So if you are using Office 365, start communicating it out to your users. Let them know that this cool stuff is there. Talk to your developers about extending it and how you can bring more relevant experiences to your intranets and your applications. And just really get the word out there about the cool stuff that we're working on. If you want more, or if you've got further questions to be able to take to, and we'll take a couple of questions in a second, if you haven't seen it already, the Office 365 Yammer Network is it's a public Yammer network. We have a lot of guys attached to Office 365 in there answering questions, both...
including us.
Including us, yeah. We get into Yammer and we'll respond to people there. So aka.ms/Office 365 network. I'll leave that there while everyone's taking photos of that slide. But yeah, like even like we've got product group guys in there that respond to stuff, all sorts of questions, developer, IT pro, end user. We've got groups within that Yammer network that cover the whole gamut of what's in 365. So last, before we take a couple of questions, please fill out your evals. It's the only way that we can learn that we're terrible. But we do value the feedback from you guys, and it helps us tailor these events going forward.
We won't get any better unless you tell us just how bad we are.
But yeah, so please, we do appreciate you taking the time to fill out your evals. And apart from that, plenty of other places to go and get some additional information. So we'll leave those links on the slide
and
there.
Before we jump to questions, I also just wanted to quickly show you this blog post.
Oh, okay, we'll do that, then we'll get to questions. I promise we'll get there.
If there's any other thing that I can really stress to customers and people who are interested about this stuff is get onto blogs.office.com, because it's where we're pumping out all the announcements, all the new stuff that's coming down. This one just came out overnight, as you can see here, and speaks exactly to this topic. So there's a lot of great information in here. It's actually quite a lengthy post that explains a lot more about where we're going and provides examples and things that partners are doing. So really good information coming through the blogs. You can filter the feed that you're getting out of the blogs, because I know we put a lot of marketing stuff in there as well. So you can go in and say, no, I'm just interested in, you know, product announcements, etc. And then the last thing that I would also just really recommend getting on is roadmap.office.com, which is where you'll see all that planned out roadmap of where we're going with the platform. And you can search across it, and you can also toggle this switch to just see the things that have changed since the last time you came and had a look. So two ways that we communicate out outside of Microsoft that I really encourage everybody to jump on.
Cool.
And with that, let's try to open to questions.
Go on to some Q&A. So down the back there first. Yeah, so the question there was, if I'm in a hybrid exchange environment where I'm routing all of my mail through Office 365 first before it hits my on-premises exchange environment, yeah, we will provide that protection as it passes through our filter and put the safe link wrapping there. So the message that's delivered, the content has been modified to have that safe link on it from there. So yes, that is provided there. You were next. Can an administrator control the quotas for video? So about like how much content a individual user or channel can have. I don't believe we have that yet.
No, I don't believe we have that at this point in time.
Yeah, so at the moment, the storage is counted against your SharePoint Online storage quota, your overall for the tenant. But the controls in that sort of space are still evolving a little, and I don't think that setting's there yet.
Not at this point in time. You'll continue to see improvements coming into video as we go forward, though.
Well, for now, when you're uploading video, it goes against your SharePoint Online quota. So if I've got 20 gig of content for SharePoint Online and I upload 10 gig of videos, then I've only got 10 gig left for SharePoint. So it comes out of that combined pool.
Yeah. Yep.
Over here. Are there retention policies and disposition dates and things like that on video content?
Not yet.
I don't believe so.
No, we haven't wrapped video with the same sort of content management controls that you'd expect across the rest of SharePoint. Not yet. Not at this point in time. No, we don't have a workflow on top of that either
yet.
So it's part of an approach that we're taking around what's called MVP or minimum viable product. So it's about getting this capability out, which we know a lot of customers will get immediate value out of. Yes, there are definitely customers that have more sophisticated needs. Over time, as we get that feedback, those features will come in. So you'll see the same thing with Office 365 Groups, for example.
Yeah.
Very simple, very basic initial implementation. Enabled a whole lot of customers to do some great stuff straight away. Over time, you'll see more of those capabilities coming into groups as well. So don't be alarmed if when new things like this launch, they don't have all those features. We're never finished with anything in the cloud. There's always ongoing development. So you'll see those coming.
For feedback like that as well, it's worth going into our user voice channel.
Yeah.
So the product groups are very directly watching that. And in their product planning meetings, they literally take this as a major factor in deciding which features to work on next. So if you're submitting the feedback to us through user voice, the product groups will see it, and it will end up in their pipelines. So that is it's a great way to make sure that we know what you guys need. Other questions?
Is that just targeted the sender, or is it a topic as well?
So the question was, does Clutter just target a sender or is it the topic as well? Clutter actually looks at a bunch of things like the contents of the message, the sender, the subject, but also how you react to it. Do I delete that email straight away? Do I move it to another folder straight away? Do I ignore it for a couple of days before I go back and read it? So all of those kinds of things are triggers that factor whether or not something will go into Clutter or something will end up in the inbox.
So far we've talked a lot about sort of very deliberate and explicit signals where the user did this, but you can also infer a lot from what the user didn't do. How long was it before the user did something? And so as we go forward, you'll see new features coming in through Delve Organizational Analytics, for example, that start to pull together that kind of information. When Aaron sends an email to Brian, Brian doesn't answer for like 8 days.
It's true.
is that a problem? Actually, it's the opposite is true. You should have seen how we put this together. But the thing is, we can start to analyze that, and then there's some very interesting insight you can draw out of that. So I can view that information as an individual and start to look at how I'm interacting within my team, but potentially we can then surface that up to a management level where you can start to aggregate that and say, how are my team working with that other team over there? So there's some very interesting stuff you can do. So even though so far we've really talked only about signals that are quite explicit, there's a lot of implicit signals that can also be drawn out of this data.
Yeah.
And the key thing about the Office graph and the APIs that are there, it's not about just giving you as a developer a big dump of all the data and saying you figure it out. The APIs are figuring out this stuff for you and delivering actionable information back down through these APIs. So it's a very, very interesting space we're moving into.
Other questions down the back there? Will Clutter interfere with current inbox rules? No. So the way that Clutter works is once a message sits at that inbox level, so it's passed through whatever other rules and it still comes to the inbox, that's the point that it's assessed for Clutter after that. So where I've got rules, back to my example of that Xbox newsletter, if I already had a rule that said take messages from that sender and move them to a different folder, it won't then take that message and put it into Clutter. Other questions down here? Yes.
Is there any integration with a hybrid environment?
So the question was, is there any hybrid integration for Delve? The answer is actually yes. We've got some stuff coming in that space. So with some recent updates to SharePoint 2013 and the on-prem product, we added the cloud search service application where you can look at having SharePoint crawl locally, but your indexes are stored in Office 365. We use a service in Azure in the middle and do all sorts of voodoo to wrap that up for you and make it easy to do. But the reality of it is once we've got the indexes of the content in SharePoint Online and the ability to use that there, you can go to Delve and see on-prem content, right? So that can start to wrap up some of that hybrid scenario there for SharePoint content. I'm not sure about Exchange content in a hybrid scenario. I think it depends where the mailboxes live, but I'd have to take that one on notice. But the SharePoint content, absolutely.
And so the important point there around SharePoint is if you're doing a SharePoint hybrid today, your search is actually being executed in real time in two locations, and then the results are being pulled together. Mm. So just to make it really clear, in this scenario, the search index is actually being pulled together ahead of time so that the search goes against that.
Exactly.
And that's what unlocks that extra capability in the cloud.
Yeah, so that's the new cloud search service application that does that, not the old hybrid approach. Cool. So the question was, are there plans to sort of further categorize email in Clutter? Not that I'm aware of, but again, if that's a feature that's useful, get in on User Voice and get that one in there so people can vote it up and the product groups can see that feedback.
So we'll take one more question.
One more and then we'll wrap up. So down here, yes. So the question was, is there any plans to sort of allow external sources to be analysed by the graph? So I mentioned through the presentation there that we're looking at how we open the graph up for developers to feed content into it to make us aware of that.
So the short answer is yes.
Yeah, so yes, there will be that ability, yeah. But it's not there yet, but it is absolutely on the roadmap. So in that way, if you've then got like an external line of business system of some sort that you want to be able to feed into the graph so that people can see specific pieces of content, that will be a scenario we're going to enable.
We totally get that not everything you do on a day-to-day basis is in Office 365.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, we do. We do get that.
We do.
So it's absolutely on our roadmap that you will be able to have that experience across those external systems.
Cool. So on that note, thank you guys for spending your time with us. We hope you are having an awesome Ignite, and we'll see you guys at the party tonight. If anyone's got more questions, we'll hang around here for a few minutes, and then we'll go down to the speaker area and the expo floor. Come and find us and have a chat. We'd love to talk to you guys. But thank you for coming.
And if you did ask a question and you didn't get a T-shirt,
we've still got a couple of things up here.
One small and two more drink bottles, so please come up and grab them. And thanks again for your time.
Cheers,
really
guys.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, man.